This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
The Game of Thrones Season 8 trailer is finally out. EW's massive Game of Thrones issue going behind the scenes of the Battle of Winterfell is also now out. I'm James Hibbard, and I'm here with Darren Franich, and we have so much to talk about this new episode of the podcast, breaking down that rather cryptic trailer and talking about some of our Season 8 set visit with new spoiler-free details about what it was really like working on the show for the final season. This is the return of EW's Game of Thrones weekly podcast brought to you by Toyota.
That's right, James. We have a new sponsor for our new season. EW's Game of Thrones weekly is brought to you by Toyota. Preparing for a journey of your own? Introducing the all-new Toyota RAV4 Limited. Fully equipped with boundless versatility and revolutionized style, it's ready to take over. And with available dynamic torque vectoring, all-wheel drive, and multi-terrain select, it's capable of embarking on almost any adventure. So no matter which direction you plan on heading, RAV4's innovative tech and intuitive navigation system gives you the confidence to venture through new territory. Visit toyota.com/RAV4 for more details. James, I'm excited to talk about Game of Thrones again with you. The trailer did just come out. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to dig into the James Hibbard issue of Entertainment Weekly, which everyone should go check out right now, with, like, how many covers do we have?
We have 16 covers, which is just bonkers. That's like the most we've ever done in EW's history as a publication, 16 different covers. And it's also 78 pages, and it's all Game of Thrones. So there are retrospectives. We have a oral history of the Red Wedding in there. We have like all sorts of different things to help you sort of catch up before starting the new season, and our set visit, which we'll talk about later. I think we should talk about the trailer first, and then we'll talk about the behind the scenes of the Battle of Winterfell.
So let's dig into the trailer. James, I didn't really know what to expect from the trailer. Obviously, I'd read your feature, and it goes so in depth about the big Battle of Winterfell, so I thought there'd be some of that. Fair to say the trailer is almost mostly that. Not even so much the battle, but we're seeing most of the majority of the characters seem to be at Winterfell now, with a few notable exceptions. Did that kind of surprise you? I mean, like, it feels like, you know, you've kind of made the point before that these Game of Thrones preseason trailers, they often show you way less than you might expect. But this felt very focused on a specific corner of the map, on where, admittedly, most of the characters are hanging out now. But that was definitely kind of a surprise for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think this season, just like the last couple seasons, the trailer is very much sort of, you know, not telling you very much in advance. I mean, and this one, I would guess that maybe half of it is from like the first episode and half of it is quick shots from the battle episode. And the rest of the season is completely dark. You know. And if you think about it, there's really not much you actually, and we'll talk about, you know, what's cool about it, but, you know, there's not much you were actually told that's new. You already knew, you know, Dany was going to, you know, Winterfell. If you read our story, you know that Arya has a, you know, big role in the battle. You know, the things that you learned that were new, I mean, is one, that Jaime, it looks like, you know, ends up at Winterfell.
In a fiery inferno, by the look of it.
Yeah, and is part of the action, which you can kind of assume even from the ending of the last season, you know, when he said that's, you know, he was going to go north and help, you know, in the battle against the dead. So, but that hadn't been confirmed until now. So that's definitely new.
Yeah, I mean, as far as other just new stuff that I noticed, there was the shot of a fleet that looked like the Greyjoy fleet, but with a lot of gold-looking people on there, which, you know, obviously kind of jumped out at me as a lifelong Greyjoy fanboy. What about that stuff? Was there anything besides the battle that really jumped out at you in this first?
You see, I didn't look at the flags on the ship, but I was thinking that was maybe the Golden Company.
Because that was
what Euron was going to go by for Cersei to help, you know, in their sneaky fight.
So Euron was involved somehow. Euron's involved somehow. That's the important thing.
Euron has a good role this season. And yeah, so I think that might be the, you know, those with those soldiers in the golden armor in there. I think that might be the Golden Company ships, and so that would be definitely new. It, there's also, if you kind of freeze it at just the right spot, you can see Tormund Giantsbane, who, you know, you didn't really think he died in that avalanche at the end of season 7, but he coulda, you know. And this is the first time that they've actually confirmed in some way that he's back.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I mean, like, because there was some thought about, like, they wouldn't just kill someone off like that. But then again, there are so many people to kill this season.
So many to kill.
It would have made sense. James, you know, one thing that I think is interesting to me about the trailer is I was sort of joking with you that in a very abstract way, the trailer kind of reminded me of the trailer for Avengers Endgame insofar as, like, here's a thing that they know they don't really have to sell it. So right. They can kind of just have a trailer full of sad people in dark rooms. And they know that that is going to kind of shut down the internet for the day. You know, we also did see someone who looks way less sad. Cersei is hanging out very far from where the action's happening in Winterfell. And I was fascinated by all of her little moments. What was your kind of read on just like, I don't know, her face in those moments was kind of tantalizing.
So fun fact about that, according to Twitter, the character name that was most used in the first 4 hours of the trailer being launched was Cersei. So that was what people were focusing on the most. And I don't even think she has a line in the trailer, but she has some...
She's like swilling wide and she's hanging out in King's Landing. Like, yeah, no, she doesn't say or even seem to be really doing anything.
Well,
it's so interesting.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, Lena Headey, you know, even just not saying anything is just fascinating to watch. You know, she has this one shot where she kind of has that smug Cersei look. And she has this other shot where she has this... you know, complex mix of a micro expressions, disturbed Cersei look. And I'm dying to know what she's thinking in that part.
So Twitter's all about Cersei. What are the other kind of big, like, I've definitely noticed a lot of love for Arya, mm-hmm. just because she's so front and center. And
yes.
I mean, as your feature kind of gets into, it is so strange that Arya has been preparing for battle, preparing to become a kind of action badass right. most of the run of the show. And it's interesting that, like, this is kind of going to be her moment in a way. I mean, she's killed lots of people, mm. but, like, this is the sort of Arya unleashed moment, which is really interesting to see. I mean, we see her covered in blood.
Yeah.
She's running down some dark corridor somewhere. Bad things are happening is the basic vibe with Arya in this trailer.
Right. Yeah, she's definitely in the mix and getting to put to use all the skills that she's been honing over all these years. You know, another thing I would point out in the trailer, my favorite shot is a shot of Dany and Jon walking to the two dragons. They're walking in this purposeful stride. You got the two dragons waiting for them. You know, people are speculating, oh, you know, is Jon going to ride a dragon? Is he going to be riding with Dany? Or are they just going to pet them and feed them? You don't really know what's going on there. But it's interesting because, you know, one of the dragons is Rhaegal, which we know is Jon Snow's, was named after Jon Snow's dad, so.
Yeah, I was very interested that, like, nothing in the trailer, like, there wasn't the moment that we're maybe waiting for where someone gives Jon and Dany the news
right.
about the fact that they are a little more related than they might
right.
have expected. But that is interesting because, I mean, there's kind of, I guess what we expect is there's the two levels to that revelation. One mm-hmm. is like, oh, I'm sleeping with my aunt, which is an interesting moment of realization. But the follow-up will be like, I guess I, Jon Snow, can be a dragon rider now. That's his sort of part of the bloodline, right? So it's interesting. That's kind of what you're talking about, that he could be approaching the dragons in that way. And
right.
Just in the kind of,
right. Well, I think the third leg there is that he has to claim the Iron Throne. Yeah, they didn't do like the hacky version of that, which is the hacky version of the trailer would have been, you know, Sam goes, John, I have something to tell you, and he walks into the room, and then they shut the door, and then it goes black. You know, that would have been totally the other way of going in that trailer. That, you know, a lesser show. You know, I could see.
No, I mean, it really is just more like they're teeing up these interesting, like, dramatic moments with everyone. We sort of talked for a second about how Gendry is hard at work in the Forge. He's doing what he should be doing. Grey Worm and Missandei are having what looks to me like maybe a final farewell. Like, we're not really in the point yet where we're going to be doing the death sweepstakes of the season, but I worry about both of those people surviving this season.
Of course, because they're a wonderfully happy, you know, well-adjusted, relatively for Westeros couple. And, you know, so, yeah. So yeah. I feel like you always have to worry about anyone that seems remotely happy with another person on the show.
I hadn't even thought about this, but this is actually making me realize that, weirdly, because I'd always assumed that either John or Danny were going to die at some point, like, just for no other reason than, like, that seems very dramatic, and they've both been so central to the show. Mm. And the show would, of course, abuse us in that way. But it's funny that, actually, the revelation about them being related will make their love life just kind of, I don't want to say disturbing enough, but just like out there enough. And it's like, oh, actually, maybe they will live. Right? And that's, they have to kind of live with this knowledge in a strange way.
Yeah, they could live and just be like utterly like conflicted and miserable about it.
You know, we're sort of talking, James, about how all the teases in this episode, but, you know, again, the big battle that's being teased, all we really see of the other side is like the hoof of the horse at the end.
Yeah, you didn't see the Night King. You didn't see.
Was that kind of surprising for you? Yeah, that like it is. I mean, again, it's the level this show is at that it doesn't need to show too much more. But it is just funny, such an interesting note to end on.
Yeah, like, I was expecting to see that sort of awe-inspiring shot of like legions and legions of the dead. But you know, it might be one of those things where, you know, they're looking at the episode and they're like, man, that shot's so cool. Let's not put it in the trailer. You know, they sort of think of, you know, the opposite of the way people normally think about trailers. It's like, no, this is too good. You know, leave it out of the trailer. Yeah. So you know, there's an interview that we did with Dan David, the showrunners, and they were just saying, you know, if it's up to us, you know, we wouldn't even do a trailer. You know, which they're only kind of half joking when they said that. You know, they were still doing a trailer because they want to do a trailer. But, you know, they'd have a little bit of mixed feelings because, you know, they love the idea of people watching and just knowing as little as possible.
That's interesting. Yeah, like, could you go the full Beyonce with this and have no, I mean, not full Beyonce because you'd have to say when the show is debuting, mm-hmm. but just sort of drop it in that way. Again, I guess it goes back to the fragile endgame comparison I made earlier, which is like, you can just show a lineup of the 13 or 14 remaining characters and just do little moments with them, not necessarily knowing what they're even doing, and that's kind of tantalizing enough for people. Was there anything else in the trailer besides the really fantastic dragon stuff? You mentioned the kind of quieter moment of Danny and John walking up to feed them or who knows what. But again, it's funny watching this now just being like, well, like there's definitely all the budget in this season because there's the one shot of the dragons going through the canyon.
Yeah.
Which it just looked a little, there was just a little more texture to it, I think, than we've gotten, even with some of the great stuff with the creatures in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah. Yeah, that looks like, you know, we might get one of those sort of, you know, joyous, occasional joyous moments like Harry Potter riding Buckbeak, you know, he's going across the lake, but, you know, the dragon version of that.
Right, well, it's funny because, again, you know, thinking about what you can do when, you know, as you mentioned, it's like 10 months and who knows how much, two films, six episodes, maybe you can actually start to do those quieter moments, whereas in the past, the dragons have been a little more like, you know, it's time to deploy them for the major fiery action set piece. Like,
right.
It's funny to think of, like, we'll see more of them, not in their kill beast mode, which would be kind of new for the last few seasons.
Right. And of course, you know, another thing we didn't see is the ice dragon. You know, there's that. You know, how is the ice dragon going to come into play?
Ice dragon, and how do they? Actually, so I didn't even realize that because the Night King is traveling on the ice dragon now.
Presumably.
So that's not even his horse at the end. I'm intrigued to see the ice dragon versus living dragon showdown, which I assume is going to happen at some point. That's one of the big question marks for me because, I mean, you know, one of the great things about your feature is you go so in depth about how just the sheer level of practical production that went into that battle is astonishing, and it's, you know, bigger Winterfell than ever before. I thought in the trailer I kind of sodged a few more exterior pieces to Winterfell than maybe we'd seen previously. But the dragons, you know, even with all the money in the world, you cannot do that practically. So it's interesting to see them sort of like holding off on some of that stuff for the season. Yeah. Anything else from the trailer that was really kind of jumping out to you this morning?
Let's see. I think we've pretty much hit all the main points.
Is it weird to you just to think about how, like, as gigantic as this last season is going to be, it's almost the most intimate in a way, just because everybody is in the same, like, you know, the same 100-foot square radius for the first time, basically since the premiere. I guess that's one thing that I liked about the trailer was it sort of mentioned, you had Bran kind of talking about everything you've done has led you here, and that sense of the circle sort of closing back around in Winterfell. It's interesting, because, you know, we've been through a couple seasons that are just so gigantic and so spread out all around around the continent. And at least this trailer is kind of like, it's all happening in Winterfell now.
Right. There's a quote in the feature story from director David Nutter talking about, you know, how there's a few shots in it where they have so many series regular characters together that it just kind of feels like you're doing a superhero movie. Mm-hmm. To your Avengers point earlier. And there's one episode that he directs, which is very much like what you're describing. It's very sort of like lots of play, like intimacy, in terms of, lots of conversations, lots of characters who've not talking. A lot of characters.
Benioff's not talking.
That. Yeah.
The showrunners are not talking about the finale.
Yeah. With a lot of characters who have either never spoken before or haven't spoken in many years.
Mm-hmm. And some of them have literally grown to twice their size since the last time they were interacting, it seems like.
To me,
that still is, in a way, just thinking about the effect of this trailer. One other thing you can draw upon is the fact that some of these characters, we've seen them grow up in front of us. And mm-hmm. I always think that is the, just mentioning the Harry Potter thing. Somehow Game of Thrones became the Harry Potter of this decade in that specific way, that it's like Arya,
yes,
and Sansa and Jon and even Dany to a certain extent. You've seen them kind of grow up and grow into these roles and grow beards the way that we did for some of the guys.
Well, Arya and Sansa haven't. There's a little exchange in the story where Sophie Turner and Maisie Williams are just sitting there in this smoky, dark hangar by themselves, and they're just like going, we're no longer the little kids of Game of Thrones. This sort of reflective moment, they're thinking about how much things have changed. It's time for all new adventures, introducing the all new Toyota RAV4 Adventure Grade, equipped with standard dynamic torque vectoring all-wheel drive and multi-terrain select. It's ready for new adventures and unexpected twists. The RAV4's distinctive rugged design is a strong indicator of its unprecedented capability, while its boundless versatility and adventurous spirit enable you to roam over almost any terrain. Begin your adventure by visiting toyota.com/RAV4 for more details.
Well, I want to dig into the feature,
sure,
if that's cool, James, because I've been fortunate enough. I've read it through a couple of times. I even read some of the special deleted scenes that maybe you'll be revealing at some later date. My favorite stuff in it comes from my personal superhero, Miguel Sapochnik.
Miguel Sapochnik is, for those who don't know, he directed Hard Home, he directed The Battle of the Bastards, he takes on the battle episode in this. It's pretty incredible what he did. At one point, David Benioff, the showrunners, mentioned that he says, I don't think any director has ever worked as hard on a television episode in history than he worked on this. The guy was really going for it. There's one part where he's literally directing three different scenes from three different units at the same time and sort of trying to dart between them. And which, for anyone who knows how these things are put together, that's just nuts. Hard.
And what I love is that, in your kind of reporting for the feature, you have just these great, to me, details that I can grasp onto, the fact that there were 11 weeks of night shoots for this single episode. And that wasn't even really the end of the filming of the episode. That was just the sort of night shoot portion of it. The number of people, 750 people working all through the night. But I just kind of love, on an artistic level, hearing Sapochnik discuss it, because he mentions this notion of we were going to film it a certain way. He kind of mentions it as almost kind of like the Marvel movie method of where you're kind of cutting it up and where there's green screen. And it seems as if at some point he certainly was very adamant about let's try to make this. We have this space to work with.
Right.
Let's make it as if not realistic, certainly as vivid and use as much of the space as we can. Which seems like, I don't know how many weeks that added to the process, but I assume it was a few.
Yeah, because normally if you sort of chop it up, really tightly, you can plan every single specific shot, every single specific close up, and you only really need, whoever's on camera and the basic crew for that particular moment. But if you do it in a more expansive way and you allow for a certain amount of flow and improvisation, and you end up with basically the whole cast that are there and within that battle on set, and then with all their attending crew members as well, and so you end up with a lot more people on set for a much longer time, and that's how it ended up being those 11 weeks of of night shoots.
And what's interesting to me about that is, you know, again, kind of getting back around to what can you accomplish with a show when you have 10 months to film 6 episodes, and when you're able to, you know, with a battle scene, or because Sapochnik directed 2 episodes this season, right? I guess I'm just, it's really interesting to me, you mentioned that David Nutter has an episode that is more kind of dialogue and more interactions. And I don't know, I guess just like, I'm glad to see that they're very aware of kind of balancing that. Like, I wonder if there was some notion of like, we have to make every week like extravaganza, and every week needs to be a you know, surprise, the dragon comes down and blows up the caravan. I expect there will be some of that, but I was very interested to see that the showrunners certainly also seemed very aware of that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you look back on Game of Thrones, it's like, you know, 80%, you know, just, you know, conversation and just characters talking, and
a lot of times,
two characters in a room. I mean, you know, the action is memorable because it's so well done, and I don't think they've ever done an action scene that was just like one of their other action scenes. They try so hard to make each of them unique, and so they really stand out in our memory, especially considering how well they've gotten at doing them in recent years. But yeah, it's definitely a mix of those big action moments and the quieter, more intimate scenes. You know, back to the directing of the episode with Sapochnik, you know, one of the quotes added into the online version was Jacob Anderson, who plays Grey Worm. He was talking about how the Winterfell additions, in terms of making that set bigger and more expansive, that you get to a point where you're running around that set, and instead, usually when you kind of run through a doorway on a set, you see like plywood and equipment. You know, you don't see more set, and you can go from room to room to room where it's all, you know, immersive set, and then you add in, you know, like, you know, snow and fire and ash, and you add in all these extras and all these actors, and you do these long takes. He was saying that there are times while working out, and plus you're working at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and you're like tired and, you know, worn out. He says there are moments that I literally forgot that I was like acting, that this wasn't real. And he says, and that's just bizarre, you know, that doesn't normally ever happen, you know, that he literally lost himself in the story.
But, you know, we usually record our podcast at like 5 or 6 in the morning on a Monday, so that's pretty hard too.
I mean our jobs are really the hard ones, talking about this stuff. Yeah, but just, you know, just the sheer amount of effort that went into this into this episode. I mean, you and the candor, which, you know, and you had to kind of, I had to kind of like coax a bit to get the actors to open up about it, because nobody wants to sound like they're whining. No one wants to sound like they're ungrateful for being in it. You know, no one wants to sound like, oh, you know, here you are, this actor who's wealthy and famous, and you're sort of complaining about what you do. But even after just a week on the set, you know, myself, I was wrecked. I actually got like this like crazy like staph infection that took like 2 months to go away. That was that, you know, it put me in the ER, which I haven't really talked about before. In fact, I have a photo. Which I'm not going to show the camera, but I will show you.
Is this in? No!
Yeah.
Oh, no!
Yeah,
it was, oh, that's it not was, good
and
at
you
all.
You can't really sell, but it's like creeping down my beard, too.
Oh, that's some like...
that's some medieval, that's some medieval stuff there, right? Yeah, it's you know...
Did you go to the ER in Belfast?
It's like grayscale, but red and swollen. It started...
Did you just like go to like, was there a like set medic you could go to?
I noticed that there's...
Oh, now the reporters...
Yeah, they're like, uh-oh. It was like last day on set that I noticed that I was feeling a bit unwell, and you know, I felt like there's something going on, but it wasn't until I was on the flight back that I really knew I was in trouble. And so I went to the ER when I got back to Austin.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and then it was like the first antibiotics didn't work, the second one didn't work, they had to keep ramping it up.
So you were sick for 2 months?
Yeah, I was sick for 2 months for being in.
You need to do a follow-up with all the actors and see, okay, what was the overall medical loss?
Yeah, well, just when I was there, I mean, you know, it's in the story. At one point, one of the, you know, major actresses on the set, you know, during a scene that wasn't an action scene, that was just like standing there, just collapsed. You know, she just went down, and the showrunners kind of ran. I've never seen the showrunners run in all the years I've been on the set, and they were just out of their tent and like running towards her. You know, there's no crew member that had to go to the hospital for an asthma attack.
One of the things I love about the feature is, you know, you're kind of speaking to the showrunners throughout, and you know, you sort of make it clear that at this point in the run of the show, they do seem to have this sixth sense about what is a calamity and what is just the 90 other minor calamities that
right.
may occur over the course of the day, and, you know, concerns about drones and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, in general, so except for when they were running to the set concerned about what are their leads, what was their kind of mood like? You've spoken to them mm-hmm. at every stage of the show from season one
yeah.
like onwards. What's the vibe like among these two guys as they are putting the finishing touches on this show? Has it changed notably from where they were at 3, 4, 5 years ago?
I mean, when I was on set, they were in the middle of directing the series finale, and so they were not looking to talk. You know, they were very focused, they were very intense, you know, they were very much looking to obsess about every detail of their episode and get it right. So, I mean, I barely talked to them while I was on set. It wasn't until later. And now they're still doing the, you know, thing where it's like, well, it's still not done. You know, we're still in editing. You know, we're still making choices. We're still putting the final touches on everything. So they're not even, I asked them to sort of tease up the season and say, you know, how's it look? You know, and they're like, oh, well, you know, we don't know yet. You know, so even now, you know, and this is just a couple weeks ago, you know, even now they're still not sort of willing to sort of, you know, praise, you know, their own work. You know, they're still in it, you know, and figuring it out.
You kind of mentioned earlier, there's a great moment in the story where you're speaking to Maisie Williams mm-hmm. and Sophie Turner. Their conversation is going all kinds of great directions. They talk about how the Titanic was made right there. But I guess I'd like to know, you know, you have these great moments in the story of, you know, kind of speaking to some of these actors. Was this kind of at a point where were they kind of making jokes? Was it like the kind of trench humor style? I think Maisie mentions that she had to train for a year for her work.
I don't know if she trained for a year, but she was definitely asked to train for a year. It sounded like she blew off some of the training, thinking that wasn't going to be that hard. But she was asked by the director, Miguel Sapochnik, like a year before to start training now because this is going to be really hard. And
But like as far as like kind of coaxing some of these stories out of the actors, was it sort of like, talk to me later? Was it kind of it seems like they were all under a great moment of like physical duress at the point that you were on set.
Yeah, no, I mean, when it came time to talk, you know, and this is just one of the benefits of being able to cover a show for year after year after year, is the actors kind of get to know you and they get comfortable around you, so they don't have their walls up as much. They were very candid. I mean, Maisie Williams said that, you know, there were times you're just broken as a human and you want to cry. Rory McCann, who plays the Hound, was just like, all of us pray we never have to do this again. Ian Glenn, who plays Ser Jorah, was just saying, you know, you just got a bunch of fucked actors and this is the most unpleasant experience I've had working on the show. You know, and again, it's like when you're there and it's like, it's hard to realize. For one thing, it's like you're not in a city. You're not like in an area where there's comforts around you. You're like in the middle of like this farmer's field, just kind of, you know, out in a rural countryside. And it's
in it the whole time, it seems like, for them. You're not always filming, but, well, I don't know, it probably feels that way when you're filming all through the night and sleeping in the daytime.
Yeah.
It's that or nothing, essentially.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's like, the temperatures are like in the low 30s. It's raining a lot of the time, and so it's the cold rain and wind and mud and, you know, horse poop and, you know, choking smoke and ash and fake paper snow that you end up, you know, swallowing. You know, so and you're sort of doing that night after night after night, you know, and you're not getting to bed till 7 a.m. and then you kind of get up and you're kind of zonked and you just kind of go and do it all over again. And so you do that night after night after night, and you just get completely smashed. And, you know, some of the heroes on the set were really the extras. Mm-hmm. And we have a thing in the new issue about the extras, because, you know, if you think about it, you've never read an interview with the Game of Thrones extra, because they're not allowed to talk to the media, and they don't. And these guys, for like around, probably less than like $100 a day, you know, they're one of the first people to get to the set. They're one of the last to leave. Nobody knows their name. You know, they don't talk about the show, and they just give every scene their best. And as a showrunner's put it, you know, an extra can make a shot, and an extra can completely ruin the shot. You know, so they always have to just be completely on just as much as the regular actors in terms of filling out the background of those shots.
Yeah, especially when Sapochnik's filming and it's just kind of like, let's do a big pile of people that someone has to climb through.
Right. I mean, yeah, and there
everyone,
are some...
Everyone stay on your toes.
There are some pile action in the final season. And yeah, you see people in there. What's really funny is you look at those body piles and you can't tell the difference between living actors faking it and the sort of corpses
crash test dummies
that the makeup department makes up, and they all kind of blend together, and then after someone yells cut, you know, the living ones will start to move, and it's just creepy as fuck.
What else did you see? We know you saw Sam because you may have single-handedly rescued a moment with Sam looking too badass, apparently.
Yeah. That was a funny moment just because John Bradley, who's so awesome playing Samuel Tarley, was fighting off whites, and the whites are played by stuntmen, and he was fighting off one after another, and he was looking great. I was like really impressed, at how much Sam has grown, and I was like, Sam looks like a badass, and the producer looked all unhappy. Brian Cogman, who's a producer and a writer on the show, who's just super terrific, and And Brian Cogman was just like, oh, that's the problem. Sam isn't supposed to look like a badass, and went in there and sort of told John to like, you need to be more Sam-like. And afterwards, John Bradley's just like, it's hard. It's difficult when you're doing some of these shots because you train and you know you can do it really well. And everybody wants to look cool, right? I mean, everybody wants to look like Jon Snow, but you have to kind of be your character, and you have to kind of look worse at something than you actually are.
Yeah. Well, and again, like I assume again, that's just the sort of the added like detail to add in once you've done all the perfect choreography is like, now I have to be the person who's not that great at
doing. Yeah. Now I have to do that, but deliberately.
He just wanted to look cool, James. He just wanted to look cool.
I mean, the thing is,
you were there.
I related to that so hard because I was just like, I would feel the same way. I would be like, I don't care what my character is. I want to look like Jon Snow. Who doesn't?
James, your feature goes so in depth about the big battle of the season. Is there an official code phrase for it? Are we just calling it the Battle of Winterfell? Is there some other cool like Twitter hashtag thing that we can get going?
Well, I mean,
Winterfallen.
Not good.
Not good. Take it back.
On set, they were referring to it as the Long Night because it is a night shoot. But I don't know if that is what they're referring to the battle as, or if that's what they're just referring to the night shoots as. Because after it wrapped, crew members were wearing jackets that said "I survived the Long Night," referring to the 11 weeks of night shoot. But it's interesting because it's like will they title the episode that? Because that's what the prequel is supposed to be called. But George R. R. Martin has said he wants the prequel called that, but HBO hasn't confirmed that. So I'm not sure what's going on there.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
But besides this, again, this single battle episode, which I love that, in your future you kind of mentioned that like there is some theory that this might be the longest, I think, is it longest continuous battle sequence in the history of filmed content? Is that the kind of definition that we're working on?
I
tried so hard to dig into what was that like Silent Napoleon movie that
I don't think
it was a continuous battle sequence.
Right. Well, it's so tough because you don't want to say it definitively. Because there could be some like silent Napoleon movie which actually beats it, and then you look.
I tried so hard to find.
And then there's someone on Twitter who goes, well, actually, but Miguel was like looking for examples, and he looked at there's two that he sort of looked at in particular, and one was Lord of the Rings: The Two Towers, and that's the Great Battle of Helm's Deep, which is a little under 40 minutes. And there's also the movie 13 Assassins, which it was just a terrific samurai movie. And the first half of that movie is all kind of lead up, and the second half is pretty much all action. And that runs about 40 minutes as well. And he was looking at it to try and get a sense of when do you tire out as a viewer? How do you balance this stuff? And he noticed that on Helm's Deep, it's not actually not continuous battle. You're sort of cutting between three different stories in that during that battle sequence.
Because they're cutting to the tree stuff too. They're cutting away from. You mean within the sequence?
Yeah. Like even within the sequence, there are different things going on in different parts of the battle, and so you're cutting between them, and they're doing that like times eight, in this. So because you're following different characters in their own stories, and it looks like from the trailer that Arya is probably one of them.
Yeah.
You know, and they all have their own story going on within this action sequence. So Arya Stark storyline is clearly one that you're following. And from what I gather, each storyline is also like a slightly different genre. So even though it's all within the same battle, like one was described to me as like survival horror, I'm sure one is going to be like out in the battlefield. I mean, you saw, Jaime Lannister at what looked like at the Winterfell ramparts, leading and yelling. So, you're going to be cutting to different ones that have different feels, and they're all kind of intermixed together. But, some of it's going to be action, and some of it's very much not going to be action. It's all in one action sequence, but one thing Miguel noted, he says the less actual fighting you see in these action scenes, in some ways that's better. So
more like anticipation.
Yeah.
More like,
yeah. So when it's longest consecutive action sequence, it's not like, non-stop fighting. It's that, from the very, literally the very beginning of the episode to the very end, it's all this war and, all the different things that are going on in between it. And there are quiet moments, within that, and suspenseful moments within that. And there's like running moments in that, there's fighting moments in that. So it's all kind of mixed together.
And again, what's interesting is this is one episode of the final six. Obviously a climactic moment in some ways, but I mean, even me knowing nothing, there's clearly a lot more that has to happen in the aftermath of it. I was just so intrigued by the fact that because the trailer that we saw this morning was so heavy on that battle, I was almost for a second kind of like, I just don't know. I was almost kind of like, is that going to be like the first episode back or something? Mm. Like, and it's interesting to me that, like, again, this to me is kind of the cool thing about this season is you do have this gigantic sort of intense war conclusion to what seems like many stories and perhaps many lives on the show moment. But there's sort of more to come after that. I guess that's where the Cersei part of the trailer kind of comes in. As far as like the rest of the season, there's great stuff on that in the feature. But what to you kind of seem the most compelling as you kind of talking to the people about what's to expect besides the long night, Winterfall?
Well, just to riff on that, it's like, there's the series opener, which is not the battle. In terms of where the battle actually falls, that hasn't been said by anyone. There's like some rumors out there, but it's basically sort of a secretive thing, so I won't like spoil that. In terms of what else is going on, that's sort of tricky to talk about, and so I'm not sure I can really get into it. The Cersei storyline, it's funny because, as we know, there's like no dialogue, it tells you nothing. I think they're kind of being a bit locked down about that one.
She still has the best strategy.
Yeah.
We've discussed this.
We talked
about this a bit in a preview episode for the season, but like the idea of being like, I have my own kingdom, which is really far away from where this battle is happening. Mm-hmm. I'm getting some good backup from like the Greyjoy fleet, and I'm like, I am not going to be totally decimated in this battle against, the literal undead and the like blue flame firing dragon. I guess she's playing the kind of pick up the pieces game, which seems, so long as everyone else heroically defeats the environmental catastrophe for her, she's going to be fine. I find that it's interesting because, I think so much of the anticipation for this season is very focused on like these character notes to pay off and this world to save, essentially. But there is still a kingdom to win, and she's the one person who's kind of allowed to be thinking about that right now, which is just so, I don't know, it's a great place to be in. I'd want to be in that place if I were someone on the show.
And then, of course, there's characters like Theon. We didn't see any of Theon.
I'm glad you mentioned it, James.
Oh, no.
I was disappointed about that, too. What's going on with Theon? He's setting off.
He's setting off to rescue Yara, or at least try to.
Mm-hmm. The payoff of the Greyjoy storyline is what everyone's really waiting for.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. But, another thing too. Hound and Mountain. I mean, that's another thing.
This is the stuff I'm talking about. Yeah. It's interesting that is just something that has been built up for so long.
Yeah.
And yet, I mean, unless something drastically shifts, it doesn't seem like that plays into this sort of long night up in Winterfell sequence. So
it'd be great if the Hound and Mountain had Clegane Bowl like in the middle of. of the White Walker attack, and they're just like, we don't care.
Like, let's do
about the Army of the Dead. We're this is on. You know, Twitter wants it.
They would definitely do that in a samurai movie or martial arts movie. That would happen. They'd be like, okay, like we're setting aside the sort of greater war for a second here.
Right. 10 minute long
mano a mano fight scene.
it's funny because one of our covers is Hound and Mountain, and we got them to cross swords on the cover as our way of sort of trying to make Clegane Bowl happen. In our character teases, there's a quote from Rory, where he says that in terms of his brother, that he will get a chance to face those demons. Mm-hmm. So he's sort of teasing to at least some sort of resolution with that storyline.
Fascinating. So James, as you mentioned, the new issue is out now with your feature, your interview with George R. R. Martin, and a wide variety of other Game of Thrones related things. Everyone should go buy, I'd say, at least six of the collectible copies.
Yeah, I think six or seven is good.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
I want the Night King one. That's the one that everybody was really freaked out about, but I'm like, that's the one that I want to get.
The Night King's one, great. And we actually have an interview with the Night King in the issue. The actor who plays him. Yeah, and he never gives an interview. So that was one where I was like, if we put him on the cover, we want to get him.
There's a core fan base for the Night King.
That
is someone who, but everyone should check that out. Your feature is up on the internet right now. Everyone can go read that alongside a lot of other coverage that you're putting up.
Yeah.
I would say, somewhat consistently between now and certainly through next month. Is there anything else that people should be kind of looking out for on the EW Game of Thrones beat?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much every weekday from here to the start of the new season, we're going to have another Game of Thrones story. We have all sorts of interviews with different actors in the show that we've been, holding to post. So we're going to have a lot of preseason content that will be spoiler-free. And then once the actual series starts to air, we're going to have this podcast coming out probably every Monday afterward. We're going to have our EW recaps. We're going to have post-mortem interviews that you won't find anywhere else with different actors, in each episode. It's pretty much saturation bombing. It's like a total Drogon, flamethrower torching of content. Pretty much nonstop all the way through. I think it's finale is May 19th.
It's two days before my birthday.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Thank you, HBO. Yeah. Planned it out just perfectly. Yeah. The day before the birthday is going to be hard on us. Hardest on you, I imagine. But that's going to be a fun Monday morning wake.
I'm sure after all this, I'm just going to just collapse. I collapse like I've been in the
James. You
the
already beat the staph infection. Yeah. You're coming back stronger than ever. Everyone should definitely check us out. We're going to be back before the season returns for one more preview episode, I think, right?
We have one more preview episode sometime after the, shortly after the premiere screening, because they're going to do a big premiere screenings in Belfast and New York, and I'm going to be going to the New York one. And so I'll be able to talk a little bit about, the first episode after that and sort of do a little more, preview content before for the new season.
And of course, we'll be doing new episodes every week after the new season debuts on April 14th. A lot of Game of Thrones stuff coming your way. If anybody wants to chat Thrones between now and then, and I assume pretty much everybody does, tweet at him. He's at James Hibbard. Tweet at me. I'm at Darren Franich. Where's all the Night King fans at? That's what I'm all about. Let's hear from him again some more. He's the most important character, it turns out. Maybe not the most important character, but he's high up there.
Yeah.
He's lasted a lot longer on the show than some people have. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with EW's Game of Thrones Weekly.